Hey, it's John Engle, and I'm excited to share that registration is now live for Grid Tech Connect Forum California. Join us in Newport Beach, June 24th through the 26th for the Interconnection event. We're bringing together utilities, developers, regulators, and advocates to take on one of the biggest challenges facing the energy transition, both at the DG and utility scale levels. Click the link in the episode description and use promo code PODCAST to save 10% on admission. Join our partners from the Department of Energy, NREL, Southern California Edison, PG&E, CAISO, Sunrun, NG, Convergent, AES, and so many more for this impactful event. We'll see you there. Hello and welcome to another episode of This Week in Clean Tech, a roundup of the week's biggest stories you need to know in climate and clean energy in 15 minutes or less. Today is Friday, December 22nd, 2023. I'm Renewable Energy World Editor-in-Chief John Engle. We'll have Renee Fox from WOSU Public Media joining us shortly. But I'm joined once again by a very merry clean tech PR veteran, Mike Casey of Tiger. Mike, I know this is the best day of your week, and it is great to see you.
John, one question quiz. How many episodes have we done so far?
Oh, I don't know. So we started this in like September or October. So
It's our 19th.
Wow. That's pretty
cool. I'm having a blast.
This yeah, is good stuff, I'm having a lot of fun too. I like to mess with you, but it is a highlight of my week as well. We also want to thank each of you for listening and giving us your feedback. So remember to send your story recommendations as well as your nominations for Clean Techer of the Week to REW@clarionevents.com. And we'll have the link in the episode description as well. Okay, Mike, it's our last one of the year. Let's get started.
Yes, sir. First one is a piece by David Wallace Wells from the New York Times. What no one at COP28 wanted to say out loud, prepare for 1.5 degrees. John, what'd you think?
Yeah, David points out that it took 28 UN COP conferences for the world to agree on the need to transition away from fossil fuels and their use, but to transition, to begin the baby steps. And in that time, we've eaten through so much of our carbon budget that what we was seen years ago as a nightmare scenario, warming the Earth more than 1.5 degrees C, now looks like more of an inevitability. Now the focus is more keeping end-of-century warming below 2 or 3 degrees. Mike, what did you think?
Well, on one hand, David notes the progress we've made. Surge in renewables, the fact that we peaked in sales of gas-powered cars, hopes that we can keep the temperature below 2 or 3 degrees. But he is right to lament that this is becoming accepted as our new normal. And I think most of us humans, we don't really realize what that means. So just to clarify, between 1.5 and 2 degrees, you get 150 million premature deaths from air pollution. All of the world's coral reefs die off, and most of the polar ice sheets are gone, and a lot of coastal housing is underwater. So you and I focus on the show, rightly, on progress and solutions, but this piece is kind of like a double espresso shot. Clean tech is not a monopoly game. This stuff is real and it's getting realer. John, story number two.
Yeah, this is from Tom Malagni from Inside EVs titled Volkswagen, Audi, and Porsche finally commit to using Tesla's NACS plug. Mike, why is this one important?
So Volkswagen, Audi, Porsche, and Scout Motors, all in the Volkswagen group, will begin to shift to the NACS electric charging plug developed by Tesla starting in 2025. So that means that new models will come with the NACS ports, and they're all working on adapter solutions for their existing vehicles right now. This is big deal, and it's good stuff, because with these additions, nearly every major automaker is now using the same EV charging plug. In common parlance, we call that a BFD. John, what do you think of the story?
It's a good way to characterize it. The move makes a lot of business sense, as Volkswagen drivers will now be able to tap into Tesla's extensive U.S. charging network. And we talked about, I think, reliability of public charging in the last episode and how critical that is to the EV transition. DCS charging is also not as reliable. One study, Mike, found that only 72.5% of CCS
charging ports were operable, whereas only 4% of Tesla drivers have reported major difficulties with their NACS charging. I think this will take us one step closer to universal compatibility, which is a great development for the industry overall, hopefully improving the charging experience for everyone as they make the switch. All right, Mike, what's our third one?
All right, number three, we have a CNN story from Matt Egan called "The United States is Producing More Oil Than Any Country in History." I just actually want to say that again. The United States is producing more oil than any country in the history of the world. John, your
thoughts? A lot of people on the right criticizing President Biden for restricting U.S. oil production, which is a bit odd given that we've actually never pumped as much as we are now. During the fourth quarter of this year, the U.S. is set to produce 13.3 million barrels per day of oil. That's not just a U.S. record, it's a global record. Mike, what did you take away?
Okay, so we've got Russia's invasion of Ukraine pushed gas prices up. That incentivized U.S. oil producers to produce more. The Biden administration encouraged that to get prices down and bring down inflation. So all good for consumers, but as we noted, the planet is on fire. And our only way out is through by accelerating the clean energy transition faster than a Tesla gets to 60 miles an hour. John, what's
our fourth
story?
By the way, we had a comment on our last episode on Spotify that that person didn't like you taking cheap shots at Elon. So keep that in mind. They said they unfollowed. So we got a minus one for that, that dig you took in the last episode. So be careful, Mike. We can't afford any more. All right. Story number four. This one's written by Timothy Gardner and Nicola Groom from Reuters, titled "U.S. Treasury Unveils Rules for Clean Energy Manufacturing Subsidy." Mike, what'd you take away?
This is actually a pretty big deal, even though it's kind of wonky. The IRA is designed not only to transition the U.S. to clean energy, but to do so through American manufacturing. And in less than a year and a half, the IRA has led companies to announce $140 billion in clean energy manufacturing investments here in the U.S. Until last week, it wasn't totally clear what would qualify for the driving force behind this. That's the IRA's 45X tax credit, which covers a portion of the cost of clean energy products such as solar panels and batteries, only if they're made here in the U.S. It's good to finally see the guidance because many companies have been waiting to make sure they actually qualify before making an investment. So I think that $140 billion number goes significantly up because of this guidance. John?
Yeah, clean energy trade groups seem pleased. SEIA was happy about these rules because they enable companies with contracted manufacturers to qualify, and they provide incentives for optimizers, those devices that enhance solar energy output and a number of different components as well. Meanwhile, the National Mining Association opposed the rules for excluding raw materials, arguing that limiting credits to the supply chain's front end could jeopardize the goal of enhancing domestic raw material supply and competing with China. It is also good to see that electric thermal storage systems will qualify here, Mike, as they could be a key piece to decarbonizing heavy industry. It'll be interesting to see who does and doesn't respond to these guidelines by announcing new U.S. production in the months to come and how Treasury is going to keep track of compliance with this whole sort of thing. Okay, our last story, Mike.
It's by Renee Fox from WOSU, the NPR affiliate in Columbus. It's called "Introducing the Power Grab." Oh boy, John, we got a lot to talk about in this one. What did you see as the significance of this story?
Yeah, so we're doing something a little bit different this week. We usually cover whatever is the big headline of the week and try to bring that reporter on. But WOSU Public Media is doing a really interesting podcast series that Renee is working on called Power Grab. That takes us inside one of the biggest scandals the U.S. power sector has ever seen, including FBI recordings from the $61 million bribery scheme involving First Energy and former Ohio House of Representatives Speaker Larry Householder. Mike, what do you think of this one before we get to Renee? Because I know you flagged this initially and said, oh my gosh, you got to stop what you're doing and check this out.
Yeah, it's just really a big deal. So I'm an Ohioan, and I just think the work that Renee's done here is if you want to really get the extent to which incumbent sectors will go to protect market share, you need to listen to this series. It is lurid. It is all the nonsense macho talk you would expect from middle-aged male politicians and their lobbyist friends with too much money on their hands. So I don't know that I can do this story better justice than Renee, who has joining us. So Renee, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for inviting me, Mike and John. Hi.
Okay, so this is a long series, and most of our listeners and viewers will not have even heard about it yet. So could I put you on the spot and ask you to kind of summarize this extremely robust stream of pieces you've done?
Yeah, well, so it kind of started just with the federal evidence that they used to convict Larry Householder. So that's a lot of federal tapes of them recording conversations by tapping phones and by pretending to be hotel developers so they could get people to meet with them and have dinner and expose their whole conspiracy inadvertently. And so that's what happened. And so the podcast kind of starts by really relying on those tapes to tell the narrative. And you learn about the major players in it, their relationships, and you get to hear the undercover talk they have. And then as it progresses, we get more into the weeds about dark money and how it works and how it worked in this case, and utility regulation and how money can kind of influence that pretty often.
And I'll just introduce mm-hmm. a quick summary here. So for folks who aren't familiar with this, this is a $61 million utility bribery scandal in Columbus, where they essentially, First Energy and some other fossil fuel players underwrote Larry Householder's drive to become not just Speaker of the Ohio State House, but have his entire caucus be indebted to him and the money he brought in behind him. John?
Well, I was going to ask the question that you always ask, Mike, to all of our reporter guests. What was your biggest takeaway here, Renee, for those who are just jumping into this story? And what do you think that, you know, should stick with them?
I think the biggest takeaway is that the kind of system of regulations that we have in place in Ohio was not enough to prevent this scandal from happening. And nothing's really been done to make sure something like this doesn't happen again in Ohio when it comes to ethics disclosures or campaign finance disclosures or changes in utility regulation. None of those things have happened since the scandal broke, which I think is pretty surprising considering.
Renee, one of the things I've been struck by through all this is just how much they got away with it. So basically, two of the people who got the bribes are now wearing orange jumpsuits, but those who gave the bribes are going about their lives just fine. Plus, the bill that First Energy bribed the politicians in order to get passed was basically a bailout of their uneconomical coal and nuclear plants, which are still operating and are charging Ohio ratepayers much more inflated rates for coal that for power that could be gotten much more cheaply. I'm just so struck by the difference between the magnitude of the transgression and the low level of accountability. Do you think that's – am I off base here?
No, I mean it's a pretty big takeaway to get from this. The way it all turned out in the end is, yeah, some people went to prison, but a lot of the actors just haven't. Like, there's hasn't been any consequences. But the coal subsidies that are still in place because of House Bill 6, those are costing Ohioans more than $100,000 a day, and it's totaled up to $230 million about so far to subsidize coal power.
Well, Renee, thank you so much for the time this weekend. And please, as you're traveling for the holidays or wherever you're going, subscribe to Power Grab and check that out because it really is an impactful series. Yeah. So congratulations to you, Renee, and your team for the work there. Before we wrap up, Mike, we do want to congratulate our Clean Techer of the Week. This week's Clean Techer of the Week is Julia McPherson, Manager of Community Relations at EDP Renewables. She builds awareness of the importance of engaging local residents in communities that are considering hosting wind and solar projects. So congratulations to Julia, our last Clean Techer of the Week for 2023.
Congrats, Julia, and thank you to Tom Starrs for nominating Julia. It was great. We are about out of time, my friend. So I want to thank our wonderful producer, Brian Mendez, Claire the Factor Queerin, and Alex Stalguide Peterson for helping gathering these stories. And we want to wish all of you a very happy holiday season.
Yeah, and a big thanks to Renee again for joining us and hearing our rambling before we record. She got an inside look at what happens on the show, and I don't know if that's good or bad for us because some of it was on tape, and now we know how Renee uses tapes. Yeah.
We're doomed. We are so doomed. All right, John, we'll have to sweat bullets over the holidays and hope Renee doesn't cut loose the tapes after
That's
in
right.
the new
All
year.
Right. Happy holidays.
Same to you.
Hey, it's John Engel, and I'm excited to share that registration is now live for Grid Tech Connect Forum California. Join us in Newport Beach, June 24th through the 26th for the Interconnection event. We're bringing together utilities, developers, regulators, and advocates to take on one of the biggest challenges facing the energy transition, both at the DG and utility scale levels. Click the link in the episode description and use promo code PODCAST to save 10% on admission. Join our partners from the Department of Energy, NREL, Southern California Edison, PG&E, CAISO, Sunrun, NG, Convergent, AES, and so many more for this impactful event. We'll see you there.